Welcome to the CISSP Cyber Training Podcast, where we provide you the training and tools you need to pass the CISSP exam the first time. Hi, my name is Sean Gerber, and I'm your host for this action-packed, informative podcast. Join me each week as I provide the information you need to pass the CISSP exam and grow your cybersecurity knowledge. All right, let's get started. Hey, y'all, Sean Gerber with CISSP Cyber Training, and I hope you guys are having a wonderful day today. Today is Exam Question Thursday, or Practice Questions Thursday, depending on how you see it online. But today is Practice Question Thursday, and we are going to be going over vulnerability assessments and network scanning, some questions that were tied to the podcast that occurred on Monday. Just as you all are aware, we do the things on Thursday to the questions on Thursday to actually reaffirm or basically make Monday better, I guess. I can't think of the word. It's 5:30 in the morning when I'm recording this, so life is good. But before we get started, I wanted to talk to you about a couple different articles I saw and wanted to get your opinion. If you guys are, feel free to chime in just go ahead and reach out to me, send me an email, or go ahead and as you see these getting posted on LinkedIn, let me know what you think about this article. But they said, Google survey said 63% of IT and security pros believe AI will improve corporate cybersecurity. And I don't know what you all think about that, but one of the aspects they said is they believe that most people will have some level of change within the old AI space and within corporate America. They said that the survey found that 21% of IT decision makers think AI will help them create security rules, and 19% say attack simulation and compliance could prove valuable. I don't know what you all think about that in regards to the overall helping them with security rules. I would say it most likely will definitely have some value in there. If we can use AI for creating code, then I don't see how that couldn't be used to make security rules and also make rules at a much quicker pace, especially if it can evaluate the current rule sets that are in place and then maybe even have it look for areas that you could do some work in and make them better. I think that would, at a minimum, would be very valuable just to have it affirm or to look at all the rules that are currently in place and then find out which ones could be changed to be more or less streamlined or if there's potentially any security issues that are falling within that. Also, they said about 25% of the respondents said that they believed AI would ultimately benefit hackers or bad actors with malintent. And it's like anything else, that tool could be used for good and for bad. But bottom line is I feel that you're going to have to embrace this technology, because if you don't embrace it, as I mentioned in that last paragraph, that the bad guys and gals are going to take advantage of it. We're already seeing this with business email communications, or BECs. And because of that, because they're crafting these letters in a much better format than they did in the past, you can only imagine that it's going to be used once they get more and more capability. It's just a matter of time. So it's important that as protectors of the networks, we embrace this new technology and try to figure out ways to use it for our benefit, because like I said, the bad guys and gals are going to be using it for their benefit. Another one I saw was around practical quantum computing is coming in the next 5 years, 3 to 5 years, and this comes from the NSA. We've talked about quantum computing for a while now, and one of the things that I feel has been limited is the fact that people are thinking, well, it may or may not happen, it will or it won't happen. It's going to come. It's coming no matter whether you like it or not. People will change. People are designed to change. And because of that design, this new journey into quantum is going to occur. One of the things that the NSA has been pushing hard is the save now, decrypt later kind of aspect that many countries are taking. I include probably most likely the US as well, is that any data that is encrypted currently that is uncrackable, they are copying and putting in locations so that they can decrypt it at a future state. And that's happening. You know it is. Whether we like it or not, those kind of aspects are going on. Now, the one thing they said that they're expecting with this in the next 3 to 5 years is this quantum computing is going to be utilizing more or less a mesh of online resources versus having your own quantum computer in your own location, which makes sense, right? You wouldn't I mean, I shouldn't say you wouldn't. There are probably some companies that would buy a quantum computer and put it within their environment. But most would, if I was owning a company, I would go out and reach out to the cloud, utilize massive resources across the cloud versus trying to invest in that in my own internal network. There may be situations where governments may do that because they don't want to have that data potentially shared. But in the most cases, that's going to be across different avenues and different platforms as we look at quantum. So if you're a business, you need to really consider how are you going to handle quantum computing. Now, if it's going to be available to the users in the next 3 to 5 years, just anticipate that a business probably won't be able to utilize it to its full potential for another 7 to 10 years because it takes time. Businesses, especially large size businesses, they don't turn on a dime, and to be able to make those level of changes is going to take time. But we see it coming right now just with Microsoft's Copilot, with how they've embedded Copilot into the Office suite of products. There is just a huge amount of opportunity, and you know it's going to happen in the next 10 years. It's going to be extremely incredible for the world. Now, could it be incredibly bad for the world? That's a possibility too. You know, who knows how this is going to play out. But I would say that the way that technology is changing so rapidly, it is just a matter of seeing what's going to occur in the next 3 to 5 years and 10. So I'm pretty excited about it. I'm not a doom and gloomer person, because if reality is the case, it doesn't matter anyway, right? No matter what we do is not going to change the fact that the technology is there, it's coming. So you might as well try to embrace the positive in it versus the negative. Okay, so let's roll into our questions for today. Question one, what is the primary purpose of a TCP SYN scan? Again, what is the primary purpose of a TCP SYN scan? A, to establish a full TCP connection. B, to identify open ports without completing the TCP handshake. C, to complete this connection or to prioritize an urgent data. So what is the primary purpose of a TCP SYN scan? And the answer is B, to identify open ports without completing the TCP handshake. A TCP SYN scan is used to identify open ports by initiating the connection with obviously the SYN packets and then waiting for the SYN ACK. We talked about that in the podcast. This obviously will then complete the three-way handshake, but because it doesn't complete the SYN scan, the SYN handshake, it cuts it off. It's just basically doing a scan. Question two, which TCP flag is set by an attacker to conduct a Christmas or Xmas scan? Which TCP flag is set by the attacker to conduct a Christmas scan? A, SYNFLUT, or SYN. B, ACK, A-C-K. C, RESET, R-S-T. Or D, the URG, P-S-H, or F-I-N, right? The urgent, push, or FIN. Again, which TCP flag is set by attacker to conduct a Christmas scan? And it is the urge, push, and fin flags that they're set that basically lights up the Christmas tree, basically to infer what is the state of the port. Again, a lack of response would be that the target system can help the attacker infer the state of the port. So that's the point. Question three, what does a CVE identifier provide? Again, the CVE is your Charlie Victor Echo. What does the Charlie Victor Echo identifier provide? A, a unique identifier for publicly known vulnerabilities. B, a severity score for the vulnerability. C, a configuration system setting for the system security. Or D, a language for writing security checklists. Again, what does the CVE identifier provide? And it's a unique identifier for publicly known vulnerabilities. And it's set up specifically for that. It allows professionals, as yourselves that are listening to this, to quickly and accurately share the information about the vulnerability and ensure that everyone is speaking in the same language. Again, it's just a common way of knowing it. Because if you had a CVE and a CDE and a CGE and they all were different, well, then you wouldn't be understanding what each other is saying. And then your standardization would be all over the place. Which of the following is not a metric used in CVSS scoring? A, base. B, temporal. C, urgent. D, environmental. So which of the following is not a metric used in CVSS scoring? A, base. B, temporal. C, urgent. Or D, environmental. And when you're dealing with CVSS scoring, the one that's not involved is urgency, right? Urgent is not a metric used in the CVSS scoring. It's obviously base, temporal, environmental are the main metrics that are part of the CVSS. Question five, which or what does the Common Platform Enumeration, CPE, Charlie Papa Echo, naming scheme identify? So what does the CPE naming scheme identify? A, security vulnerabilities. B, IT systems, software, and the packages associated. C, security configuration issues. Or D, compliance and security checklists. So what does the Common Platform Enumeration scheme identify? And the answer is B, IT systems, software, and the associated packages. If you remember, we talked about on the podcast, there's basically, it's all separated by colons, and it walks through, this is Microsoft, this is pack version 1907, blankety, 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 blank. So it basically breaks down the systems, the software, and the associated packages. Question six, which protocol is used by OVAL, O-V-A-L, Oscar Victor Alpha Lima, to determine the presence of vulnerabilities? A, TCP, B, UDP, C, ICMP, or D, XML. So which protocol is used by OVAL to determine the presence of the vulnerabilities? And the answer is D, XML. XML is used to determine the presence of the vulnerabilities and the configuration is on those specific computer systems. And then OVAL definitions are used by the various security tools to automate that vulnerability assessment process. Question seven, what is the result of a TCP ACK scan if the port is unfiltered? Okay, what is the result of a TCP ACK scan if the port is considered unfiltered? A, the port sends a reset response. B, the port sends a SYNACK response. C, the port sends a FIN response. Or D, there is no response from the port. Okay, so a TCP ACK scan, unfiltered. And that would be A, the port sends a reset response. So when it sends that reset response, this scan is used to understand the filtering rules applied by the ports and rather than determining if the port is open. Question eight, which TCP flag indicates the data should be processed immediately by receiving the application? Which TCP flag indicates that the data should be processed immediately by receiving applications? A, push. B, SYN. C, reset. D, ACK. So which TCP flag indicates that the data should be processed immediately by receiving the application? And the answer is A, push, the PSH flag, the Papa Sierra Hotel. This indicates that the data should be processed immediately by receiving the application. When the push flag is set, the receiving and instructed to push the data to the application as soon as possible without waiting for a buffer to fill up. That's the point of the push. Question 9. Which is the purpose of an urgent pointer in TCP? A, to reset the connection. B, to synchronize the sequence numbers. C, to prioritize certain data within the segment. Or D, to indicate the end of the data transmission. Again, what is the purpose of the urgent pointer in TCP? And the answer is C, to prioritize certain data within the segment. So the urgent pointer in the TCP is used in conjunction with the urgent flag to indicate there are certain data within the segment that should be prioritized. Obviously, it uses the data to immediately get attention. Bypassing data can be processed later. So that's the purpose of the urgent pointer in the TCP stack. Question 10, which scanning method completes the full TCP three-way handshake? So which scanning method completes it? So it's basically the SYN, the SYN-ACK, right? So you have all of that. Which one does that? The TCP connect, or A, the TCP SYN scan, B, the TCP connect scan, C, the TCP ACK scan, or D, the UDP scan. Okay, so if you break these down, we know the UDP scan won't do that because it's just a barrage type scan, right? So that would break you down into three different questions you can answer. So again, which one completes the full three-way TCP handshake? And the answer is B, the TCP connect scan. It completes the full three-way handshake, whereas the scanner will send the SYN, and then the expects the SYN-ACK, and then it will send the ACK packet to establish the full connection. Okay, this is obviously more detectable when you're dealing with trying to scan a specific box. Therefore, it is not used unless you are targeting one very specific device. Question 11. What does the extensible configuration checklist description format, that's that really long, nasty one, ECCDF, right? The ECCDF specify. So it's called the Extensible Configuration Checklist Description Format. What does it specify? A, vulnerability severity scores. B, system security configuration issues. C, IT systems and software identification. Or D, security checklists and benchmarks. So what does the extensible, let's just go with the XCCDF. What does it specify? And it specifies D, the security checklist and benchmarks. It's a language and data model for expressing security checklists, benchmarks, and related documentation. We talked about that in the podcast and how it's specifically for that. And it's used primarily, you'll see this in some of the governmental aspects around this product. But it does allow for creation, maintenance, and dissemination of security configuration information, and is consistent with machine-readable format. Question 12, what is a typical response from a port during a UDP scan if the port is closed? So what is a typical response from a port during a UDP scan if the port is specifically closed? A, a SYNAC response. B, a reset response. C, an ICMP port unreachable error. Or D, no response whatsoever. So a UDP scan if the port is closed. And remember we talked about that with ICMP is tied to the ping. It would be C, port unreachable error. This UDP scan, the target will typically respond with an ICMP port unreachable error. So basically the port is not listening for any UDP packets. Therefore, no response and the port is presumed open or filtered. Question 13, which of the following is not part of the initial TCP process handshake process? A, SYN. B, SYNAC. C, ACK, or D, URGE, right? Urgent. And we've talked about this as you just went through with this process on this the podcast. It would most likely be D, urgent. You are correct. So the SYN, SYNAC, and ACK are all part of the TCP handshake. Urgent is not part of it. That's the flag that's tied into the TCP overall process, but it is not part of the handshake process. Question 14, what does a high CVSS score indicate about a vulnerability? A high CVSS score indicate about a vulnerability. A, it has been fully mitigated. B, it is difficult to exploit. C, it is significant impact and easy to exploit. Or D, it is only present in a specific user environment. High CVS score. What CVSS score? Not CVS, the pharmacy. CVSS score. What does that mean? And it is C, a significant impact and is easily to exploit. Again, the base score is determined by analyzing exploitability and impact of the vulnerability. So therefore, the higher the score, that's bigger the impact and potentially easier to exploit. Question 15, which of the following is true regarding this CVE-2021-34527 vulnerability? We kind of talked about that a little bit online or on the podcast a bit, but what does that mean? What does it tie to? Some of you may know what this is because we ran into a problem with this back in 2021. A, it's also known as the print nightmare. B, it's a UDP-related vulnerability. C, it's assigned a low CVSS score. Or D, it affects the Linux kernel. Well, we know it's in 2021, right? We know that vulnerability exists, and it is part of the A. It's known as the print nightmare. This vulnerability hit the Windows print spooler, right? And it happened back in 2021, and they assigned a very high CVSS score due to the impact, and which was extremely easy to exploit and caused a lot of drama in 2021. Okay, that's all I have for you today. Go out to CISSP Cyber Training and check out all of this information. It's all there for you. It's all free. A big chunk of it is free for you all. You'll be able to get all these videos that are out there. You'll have access to that. If you really want to get access and make sure you're studying for the CISSP and you need help with that, check out all the paid products that I have available for you. I have a blueprint, which will give you everything you need to pass the CISSP exam. It'll walk you through the book step by step by step, telling you what you should study, what you shouldn't study, or what we should study today, what you should study tomorrow. And then it'll also give you access to all the podcasts, all the audio. All of that is going to be there and available to you in a mobile format even, so that while you're driving to and from work, listening to it while you're watching your children, and then don't fall asleep when you're listening to it when you're watching your kids, okay? Don't do that. That would be bad. But all that's going to be available to you if you go out to CISSPcybertraining.com. Go check it out. Leave me a review in iTunes. I would appreciate it. Anything positive is always awesome. If it's negative, send me an email. See if I can fix it, because I really would. If there's some problem that you got, let me know, and I'm happy to deal with it and address it. All right. Have a great day, and we will catch you guys on the flip side. See ya.
Thanks so much for listening today, as it was my pleasure to prep you for the CISSP exam. But are you interested in some free CISSP exam questions? Head on over to CISSPquestions.com and sign up to join my email list, and you will gain access to 30 free CISSP questions each and every month. That's a total of 360 questions just for signing up with CISSP Cyber Training. You will also gain access to other free resources, so just head on over to FreeCISSPquestions.com or CISSPCyberTraining.com and sign up today. All right, have a wonderful day, and we'll catch you on the flip side. See ya.